want you to hold this for me. Now, the third chapter of the Bhagavatam has a very deep and important purpose. Because in one sense, it presents or concludes the presentation of the essence of the Bhagavatam. We've mentioned when we went over the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there is a wonderful progression that describes the increase in one's purity and the development of one's Krishna prema. So that Krishna prema, that love of God, that is described in the second chapter, bhakti paramayo mudha, the great sages, the kavis, they render this devotional service with to the paramayo, to the Supreme Lord, with mudha, with great relish, great taste. This is the essence of their existence. And prior to that, before that bhakti is being described, that truth, that paramayo, that paratattva is described prior to that as vedanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yajjhanam adhyam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaneti sabyate. That absolute truth is understood in three features. They are all the same, adhaya. They are non-dual, non-different from each other. But they are realized in three different... The one truth is realized or understood, perceived in one out of three different ways depending upon the method of perception that is used. So the jnanis will see Brahman. The yogis will see the Lord, that absolute truth, as Paramatma. And the devotees will see that absolute truth as Bhagavan. So after this progression has been described, first this tattva that everyone must achieve the purpose of their life, narto yas cheha karmabhi, there should be no other inquiry, there should be no other effort put in our life except that to understand this absolute truth. And then the progression was described, ending with the description of how the devotees they worship this absolute truth with bhakti and derive great relish of that. So directly after that, we've discussed this already, how Sutta Goswami describes that absolute truth, that type of worship, the bhakti that one should do, should only be done to Vishnu. Not the demigods. One can't properly perform bhakti to demigods. And the reason is given is because Lord Vishnu is the predominator of the mode of goodness. And as jagya gets its result not from the wood and not from the smoke, but from the fire itself. So similarly, the actual result of one's devotion can only be achieved if one worships Lord Vishnu. And then, after that, Sutta Goswami describes Bhagavan. So he's equated Bhagavan with Vishnu, and then he equates Bhagavan with Vasudev. So he says then, after concluding the section describing how important it was to worship Vishnu, he says, Vasudeva param veda, Vasudeva param mukha, Vasudeva param parayagya, Vasudeva para Kriya, that it is Vasudeva who is to be worshipped by everything. He is the actual purpose. He is the purpose of the Vedas. He is the purpose of all, later on he'll say tapa, and then he'll say of all jagya, all gyan, and because he is the paramgatim. He is the supreme goal. So he's described that the truth is Bhagawan, and one should worship Vishnu, but yet it is Vasudeva who is the supreme. So in the final section of the second chapter, Sutta Goswami describes how Vasudeva, the all-pervading absolute truth, is Bhagawan and is Vishnu. So Bhagawan has these different aspects. So it is not 100% clear actually who Bhagawan actually is. Who is this Bhagawan? Who is the Paratattva? Who ultimately who is the object of all worship? The object of all tapasya, the supreme abode. Who is that Bhagawan, the possessor of all opulence? So that is how the second chapter ends and the third chapter begins. And the third chapter begins, the first five verses discuss the three Purushas who are Vishnu. So when we discussed this previously, I mentioned that this first verse was extremely important because it gives a hint, or a hint that will be used later in the third chapter to describe who Bhagawan actually is. So the third chapter begins with a verse, Jagrahe Purusham Rupam Bhagawan Maha Alibi. This means that Bhagawan, he accepts, Jagrahe means he accepts, the Supreme Lord, he accepts Purusha Rupam. That means the form of the Purushas. And these Purushas, they are called the Purusha avatars, Karana Dakshay Vishnu, Gaba Dakshay Vishnu, and Kira Dakshay Vishnu. We've discussed this already. So, Bhagawan, he accepts the form of the Purusha avatars. So there is Bhagawan, and then there are the Purusha avatars. So it doesn't yet describe who Bhagawan actually is, but it explains that Adau Lokam Shikshaya, for the purpose of creating the material existence, the material world, he assumes these Purusha avatars. First Karana Dakshay Vishnu, which the cause and effect, the Padan, is established. And then in the second and third verses, it describes the activities of Gaubadakshay Vishnu. And Gaubadakshay Vishnu is that form of Vishnu that enters within the universes, which have come from the skin poles, the pores of Mahavishnu. He is so powerful that universes come and expand from his skin holes. And then he expands himself further as Gaubadakshay Vishnu. And this Gaubadakshay Vishnu, as these verses describe, is described in the Vedas, in the Rig Veda specifically, is Shahasra Shirsha Purusha. In the Purusha Sukta, he is described as the thousand-headed Purusha. And with devotion, those devotees who actually have devotion can actually see him in this form. This is what the fourth verse describes. Then in the fifth verse, in completing this description of the Purusha avatars, whom Bhagawan has assumed this form, then in the fifth verse, it describes how that this form of Gaubadakshay Vishnu, Etan Nanavataranam Nidanam Bijam Avyam, that this form of Gaubadakshay Vishnu, he is the source of all the incarnations. Because this is one of the questions of the sages of Namasharanya that they've asked Srila Sutta Goswami, please describe how the Lord incarnates within this world. Please describe the different incarnations which attract the mind of everyone. Because the activities, as we've been hearing for the last 2 days, the activities of these incarnations, and there are so many different kinds, they are so sweet and they are so unique that everyone's mind becomes attracted. And these, as this verse describes, this form, the second manifestation of the Purusha, is the source, an indestructible seed of multifarious incarnations. They are all coming through Garbhadaksha Vishnu. Actually, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, they come through Chiradaksha Vishnu. And because Chiradaksha Vishnu comes from Garbhadaksha Vishnu, it is described that he is the indestructible seed. It is called Bijam Avyayam. When we think of a seed, we plant a seed in the ground, and from that seed comes a tree. But when that tree is produced from the seed is destroyed and there's no more seed left. But this seed of Garbhadaksha Vishnu is different because he is Bijam Avyayam. He is indestructible and inexhaustible. And so many trees of the incarnations, the avatars, come from him, and yet he still remains as the Bijam Avyayam. He is not diminished in any way, although so many unlimited personalities come from him. So this is what's being described. Jagrahe Purusham Rupan Bhagavan Maha Adibi. That Bhagavan takes the form of these Purusha avatars, and from the Purusha avatars, Garbhadaksha Vishnu, Kiradaksha Vishnu, all the incarnations come. Jagraham Purusham Rupam. Remember this word, that sentence. Jagrahe, he accepts, Bhagavan accepts the form, Rupam, of the Purushas. So then, in the sixth verse, it describes Saeva Pratamamam Deva, and then Komuram Sargam Asrita. That the Lord, the first, Pratam means the first incarnation that the Lord takes is the four Kumaras. And then, as we've been hearing the last 2 days, there is a second, he takes on so many other forms as well. He takes on the forms of Varahadev, of Matsya, of Korma. So many incarnations. There is a list in this section of 22 incarnations. But we're not, and we've heard about them. But Sutta Goswami's purpose in describing all this is to describe actually what is Bhagavan, who is the source of all incarnations. So in the 20th verse, not the 20th, but the 22nd verse, he describes the 18th incarnation. After describing the Kumaras and Matsya and Korma and Rishabhdev and so many other incarnations, he describes Nara Devatam Apanam Surya Karya Chakirshaya. In the 18th incarnation, the Lord appeared as King Rama. And hopefully, if we have time, we'll hear about Lord Ram. In order to perform some pleasing work for the demigods, he exhibited superhuman powers by controlling the Indian Ocean and then killing the atheist king Ravana, who was on the other side of the sea. So that's the 18th incarnation. Now, in text 23, there's going to be a description of the 19th and 20th incarnations. Ekon vimse vimsatame vrishnishu papya janmani Rama Krishna iti bhuvo bhagavan aharad param. And all the different incarnations that have been described so far, the word Bhagavan has not been used. But here, It has been used, this word has been used to describe the incarnation of Krishna and Balaram. So, Prabhupada's translation. In the 19th and 20th incarnations, the Lord advented himself as Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna in the family of Rishni. Bhagavan Aharad Baram. That Bhagavan comes. For what purpose? Aharad Baram. To remove the burden of the earth. This is the purpose of the advent of Krishna and Balaram. So, and by so doing, by him coming in the Vrishni or the Yadav dynasty, he removes the burden of the world. And then, this is just in the list of all the incarnations, but the hint is given already that Bhagavan has come. In 24, then in the beginning of Kali Yuga, the Lord will appear as Lord Buddha, the son of Anjana, in the province of Gaya, just for the purpose of deluding those who are envious of the faithful theists. That's the 21st incarnation. And the 22nd incarnation, thereafter, at the conjunction of two yugas, the Lord of the creation will take his birth as the Kalki incarnation, and he will become the son of Vishnu Yas. At this time, the rulers of the earth will have degenerated into plunderers. So, that was the 25th verse. Now in the 26th verse, so that completes Sutta Goswami's list of the incarnations. In the 26th verse, Sutta explains to the sages, O Brahmanas, the incarnations of the Lord are innumerable, like rivulets flowing from the inexhaustible, from inexhaustible sources of water. So 22 incarnations have been named. But this is not the totality of incarnations. This is just a small number of the actual incarnations, because there are innumerable incarnations, just like rivulets, just little rivers coming from an inexhaustible source of water that can be inexhaustible, innumerable and inexhaustible. Rivers coming from an inexhaustible source of water. So similarly, there are innumerable incarnations, although only 22 have been listed. And then in text 27, all the rishis, the manus, the demigods, and the descendants of Manu, who are especially powerful, they are kalasave hare eva sampragya pataya smita. They are plenary portions, or portions of the plenary portions. That means angs or kala. We've discussed this before. They are also avatars and plenary portions of the Lord. Prabhupada explains in his purport that the ones who are called vibhutis, or the Lord's potencies or his opulences, and those who are more powerful are called avesh incarnations. So there are different, so many different types of incarnations. There are innumerable incarnations of every type. And where have these all come from? Jagrahe Purusham Rupam Bhagavan Mahadibi. They are all coming from Lord Vishnu. The 22 plus the innumerable others. But now, Sutta Goswami will explain something that clarifies who Bhagavan actually is, who the Supreme Lord actually is. So this verse, this next verse, is perhaps the most important verse of the entire Bhagavatam. We'll explain why in a few moments. Ete cham sakala pungsam krishnastu bhagavan sayam Indradi vyakulam lokam vidayante yuge yuge Ete cham sakala pumsan Krishna su bhagavan sayam Indradi vyakulam lokam vidayante yuge yuge. So Sutta says, Ete means all these. What? All these what? because he has just listed 22 incarnations, plus he has said that there are innumerable more incarnations of different kinds. There's the Kalas and there's Ankses and Vibhutis, Avesh, Leela avatars, there's Yuga avatars, Purusha avatars, Swayam Rupa, Tadakatma Rupa. There are so many different types of incarnations. Yuga avatars. So Ete, all these, the ones that have been described directly, and those who have not been described, they're either Ete Cha. Cha means all the rest. The ones that have been described and not described, they are all either Angsa or Kala. Of whom? Pumsa. Pumsa means person, the person. What person? Person means Purusha. And what Purusha? The Purusha avatars. So this word, Pumsa, it is basically the same word that is used in the first verse of this chapter, Jagrahe Purusham Rupam. So all these incarnations, Ete, both the ones that have been mentioned and not mentioned, they are all Angsa, parts of plenary portions, or they're portions of plenary portions, or plenary portions. So all the avatars are coming from the Purusha. Ete Changsa, Ete Changsa Kala Pumsam. They're all coming from the Purusha. Two means but. And but means a change of subject. So all the incarnations are coming from the Purusha, but Krishna Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna Stu. Tu means the change of subject, but. Or sometimes it means, the meaning can be indeed. But indeed, even though all the incarnations come from the Purusha, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is in a different category. He is the origin of the Purusha. He is Bhagavan Swayam. He is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Purushas come from him. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, and also in the different Sandarbhas, Srila Jiva Goswami describes completely clearly, quoting from Shastra, how the different avatars are there, and the Purusha avatars are there, that the Purusha avatars come from Lord Balaram and Shankarshan, and Krishna is the original Vasudev. And Krishna, again, is Bhagavan Swayam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In a different category, just like we may say that all the people in this room live here, but one traveling sannyasi has passed through to be kind to us. So by saying but, we're describing a category of personalities in this room, but there is one who is in a different category. So that is the meaning of the term tu, Sanskrit tu, or the English but. And then describing the purpose of the incarnations, the general purpose of the incarnations who come through the Purusha is Indrali Vyakalam Lokam Ridayante Yuge Yuge. All of them appear on planets whenever there is a disturbance created by the atheists, the Lord incarnates to protect the theists. So here is the verse, and we'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. All of the above mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord. But Lord Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. All of them appear on planets whenever there is a disturbance created by the atheists. The Lord incarnates to protect the theists. Prabhupada's purport. In this particular stanza, Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, is distinguished from other incarnations. He is counted amongst the avatars, incarnations, because out of his causeless mercy, the Lord descends from his transcendental abode. Avatar means one who descends. All the incarnations of the Lord, including the Lord himself, descend on the different planets of the material world, as also in different species of life to fulfill, particular missions. Sometimes he comes himself, and sometimes his different plenary portions, or parts of the plenary portions, or his differentiated portions, directly or indirectly empowered by him, descend on this material world to execute certain specific functions. Originally, the Lord is all full of opulence, all prowess, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation. That is the meaning of Bhagavan. When they are partly manifest, when these qualities are partly manifested through the plenary portions, or parts of the plenary portions, it should be noted that certain manifestations of his different powers are required for those particular functions. When in the room small electric bulbs are displayed, it does not mean that the electric powerhouse is limited by the small bulbs. The same powerhouse can supply power to operate large-scale industrial dynamos with greater volts. Similarly, the incarnations of the Lord display limited power because so much power is needed at that particular time. For example, Lord Parsaram and Lord Nrisingadev displayed unusual opulence by killing the disobedient Kshatriyas 21 times and killing the greatly powerful atheist Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu was so powerful that even the demigods and other planets would tremble simply by the unfavorable raising of his eyebrows. The demigods and the higher levels of material existence many times excel the most well-to-do human beings in duration of life, beauty, wealth, paraphernalia, and in all other respects. Still, they were afraid of Hiranyakashipu. Thus we can simply imagine how powerful Hiranyakashipu was in this material world. But even Hiranyakashipu was cut into small pieces by the nails of Lord Nrisingadev. This means that anyone materially powerful cannot stand the strength of the Lord's nails. Similarly, Jamadagni displayed the Lord's power to kill all the disobedient kings powerfully situated in their respective states. The Lord's empowered incarnation, Narada, and plenary incarnation, Varaha, as well as indirectly empowered Lord Buddha, created faith in the mass of people. The incarnations of Rama and Dhanvantari displayed his fame, and Balaram, Mohini, and Vamana exhibited his beauty. Dattatreya, Matsya, Kurma, and Kapila exhibited his transcendental knowledge. Nara and Narayan Rishis exhibited his renunciation. So all the different incarnations of the Lord indirectly or directly manifested different features. But Lord Krishna, the primeval Lord, exhibited the complete features of Godhead. And thus it is confirmed that he is the source of all incarnations. And the most extraordinary feature exhibited by Lord Sri Krishna was his internal energetic manifestations of his pastimes with the cowherd girls. His pastimes with the gopis are all displays of transcendental existence, bliss, and knowledge, although these are manifested apparently as sex love. The specific attraction of his pastimes with the gopis should never be misunderstood. The Bhagavatam relates these transcendental pastimes in the 10th canto. And in order to reach the position to understand the transcendental nature of Lord Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, the Bhagavatam promotes the student gradually in 9 other cantos. According to Srila Jiva Goswami's statement, in accordance with authoritative sources, Lord Krishna is the source of all other incarnations. It is not that Lord Krishna has any source of incarnation. All the symptoms of the Supreme Truth in full are present in the person of Lord Sri Krishna. And in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord emphatically declares there is no truth greater than or equal to Himself. In this stanza, the word Swayam is particularly mentioned to confirm that Lord Krishna has no other source than Himself. Although in other places the incarnations are described as Bhagawan because of their specific functions, nowhere are they declared to be the Supreme Personality. In this stanza, the word Swayam signifies the supremacy as the summum bonum, or the source of all else. So this verse describes that it is Krishna and no one else who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For Krishna displays the full opulence, beauty, strength, knowledge, wealth, all attractiveness that is actually the Supreme Lord. So this verse, more than any verse, explains this. Who is Bhagawan? So, Jiva Goswami decides that he is going to prove. Of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he decides in Sri Krishna, actually all his sandarbhas are really directed to expressing the truth about Krishna and our relationship with him. But in Sri Krishna Sandarbha, which is the fourth sandarbha, he decides to prove this completely and take on all opposition. So he first, when he describes this verse as the conclusive proof, he says he first takes the opposing argument and saying this is one verse only, but there are so many verses in other scriptures and so many verses even in the Bhagavatam that describe other aspects of the Supreme as the absolute truth. Some verses say Shiva is the absolute truth. Some verses say Brahman is supreme. And some verses will say Lord Narayan is the supreme. And you are taking this one verse, he's taking the position of the opposition. And you are taking this one verse to show that Krishna is the supreme Lord? And then Jiva Goswami, after putting that forward, goes to work. And we have to offer our most humble obeisances at the lotus feet of Srila Jiva Goswami, because what he establishes in the sandarbhas, and it also should be noted that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, so much of the philosophy that Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj presents is presented directly from the sandarbhas. And thereby, by reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, we're actually reading the most essential and important points of the satsandarbhas of Jiva Goswami. And therefore, Prabhupada so wisely gave us Chaitanya Charitamrita, because everything is in there. Everything is in there, all the philosophy. And even the points of establishing Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and establishing the proofs of that are given in brief by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in the second chapter of Adi Lila. So in any case, Jiva Goswami starts fighting. And he's such a fighter. Prabhupada once told me that there has never been a scholar like Jiva Goswami, nor has there ever been a scholar as great as Jiva Goswami. And one Dhyanachand Goswami, he has said that Jiva Goswami has the Bhagavatam, he knows the Bhagavatam as one may, if one held a walnut in his hand, a nut in his hand, and can feel every element of it all at once. Jiva Goswami knows the Bhagavatam like that. and he starts to exhibit some of his incredibly empowered opulence when he describes this. So the first thing Jiva Goswami describes, that he says that this one verse is not just an ordinary verse. He says this is a sutra. And there are six kinds of sutras. And he just lists them. And this is the most powerful of all sutras. And it is called a Paribhasya Sutra. And this Paribhasya Sutra, or the purpose of a Paribhasya Sutra, is that it gives the essence, or the key, or the entirety of the import of a particular shastra. It gives it in a condensed form. And the condensed form of the entire shastra is required, especially in a lengthy book, to understand the rest of the shastra. Because things are sometimes written indirectly. And especially the Vedic scriptures, Krishna himself says in the 11th canto that he appreciates parochavad, when things are indirectly spoken and spoken with many meanings. So if things are indirectly spoken and spoken with many meanings, how can someone understand the consistent meaning? And that's the purpose of giving the key to understand the consistent meaning of the Bhagavatam or any scripture is its Paribhasya Sutra. And this is the Paribhasya Sutra of Bhagavat Tattva. The Vedanti Tattva Vedas is the Paribhasya Sutra of the Absolute Truth. And this, aka Ete Chansa Kalapam Sam, Krishnastu Bhagavan Sayam, is the Paribhasya or key sloka that makes it possible to understand all the philosophy and all the arguments and all the examples and all the prayers that are given in the Bhagavatam. By understanding this one sutra, all the rest of the verses can be understood. And without understanding the sutra, one will find inconsistencies, one will find a group of stories meant for the pleasure of the listener to entertain them, but one won't find a consistent philosophy. Therefore, Jiva Goswami compares this one sloka to a great Maharati, a great king who is so powerful he can take on unlimited other armies. So after describing this, and then he describes the characteristics of a sutra, there should only be one in a book. It has to be very concisely spoken. No extra words. It has to give the essence. And it is spoken right at the beginning, too, so that one understanding this can understand the rest of the book. So he gives all this. And then, using this Paribhasya Sutra, he starts to take on all the arguments, the opposing arguments. And first he starts with the argument that in many, many other scriptures, other truths are said to be the absolute truth. And he starts, and one by one, he takes on the arguments from so many different other scriptures saying that this is the absolute and this is the absolute truth, and using Sanskrit grammar and using Shastra, especially the commentaries of Sridhar Swami, Swami Charan. He rips apart everything to establish what they really mean. It's not what you are saying, but they're all, everything, is simply pointing to Krishna. All Shastra, Vedas Chasavaraham Eva Vidyo, everything simply points to Krishna being the absolute truth. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan Sayam, in complete agreement with the Paribhasya Sutra of the Bhagavatam, because the Bhagavatam is Amala Purana. It is the highest of truths and the highest of evidence for finding the truth. So after doing that, he then takes on all the arguments within the Bhagavatam itself, all the verses in the Bhagavatam itself that people say contradict this conclusion of the Paribhasya Sutra. Some some verses will say that the Supreme is Brahman, it can be interpreted in that way, and some will say that Paramatma is the Supreme, or some will say the Purushas are the Supreme. So one by one, after finishing the arguments of those in other scriptures, he finishes the arguments just by using this one Paribhasya Sutra of 8 Chamsa Kalopamsa. He finishes all the opposing arguments that people can construe from the Bhagavatam, saying that something else other than Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this Jiva Goswami has established so strongly that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in especially in the Satsandarbhas, that these were written about over 400 years ago, and no one, be the person a Mayavadi, be the person a member of the Ramanuja or Madhva Sampradaya or the Nimbarka Sampradaya, no one has dared to make even a simple, single attempt to refute Jiva Goswami's arguments, because he has split the hair hundreds and hundreds of thousands of times and proved everything so conclusively no one will touch it. Rather, some of the Sampradayas, what they did was take the philosophy of Jiva Goswami and make it their own. They couldn't. They had to surrender to it. And Bhakti Sampradayas especially done this. They had to surrender to it. So after being so victorious, going around with this Paribhasya Sutra and defeating all other arguments, there was one sloka that Jiva Goswami says, and Sri Krishna Sundarbhi says, like a great heroic king who has just defeated hundreds of enemies in the form of opposing arguments and has completely brought them under his submission, to the great delight of all onlookers, I shall now bring into view the multitude of arguments that form the foot soldiers, cavalry, chariot warriors, and elephant riding warriors of his armies to prove that Krishna is the origin of all the Leela avatars. So after destroying the opposing arguments with this one sloka, then he starts pulling out tens of slokas from the Bhagavatam, other slokas which just simply support this sloka, showing how Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kaviraj Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he especially uses one of them, which is perhaps or one of the most important ones. This one, I have it with me somewhere, but it's disappeared. This Narayanam Tvam Nahi Sava Dehinam, from when Lord Brahma comes, because after all, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the Supreme Lord, he's the source of majestic Narayan, he's the source of all the lords of Vaikuntha, he's the source of the powerful Purusha avatars. Universes come from their skin holes, and Lord Brahma sees him herding the cows in Braja. How is this possible that he is the Lord and Master? He's with his friends and he's playing with them and they're pushing each other and imitating birds and peacocks and monkeys. And he is the Supreme Lord holding yogurt and fruit in his left hand. He doesn't even know to hold it in his right hand. Peacock feather, earth, minerals on his face. Herding cows. Walking without shoes even, such a village boy. He's the Supreme Lord. So Lord Brahma, after seeing how Krishna had killed his Agasura, he wanted to see something more. And he heard the demigods all saying, Jai, Jai! And that sound penetrated up to Brahma Loka, and he wanted to see more. So we know how he came and stole the cows and the boys from Krishna, and he put them in a cave. Krishna simply created more. And when Brahma came back a year later, he saw those cows and boys were still there, and he was shocked. He had taken them and they were there. He became confused by his own display of power. And then, when all the boys started showing, and the cows started showing forearm forms, Brahma understood that this boy, this Krishna, there is so much difference between the potency of his body and the potency of my body, I can't even estimate it. So then he offered prayers to Krishna. And one of those prayers was this one, which is so important to establish that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that because of this prayer, practically speaking, the Madhvacharyas, the Tattvavadis, say that the 14th chapter of the tenth canto of the Bhagavatam is fake, because they don't want to allow this prayer to be accepted of Lord Brahma's. They say it's interpolated, the 14th chapter, and added in, because they don't want, because this prayer, when Lord Brahma he looks at Lord Krishna and he says, "You aren't you Lord Narayan?" Narayanastvam nahi sarvadehinam atmas yadi sakila loka shakshi Narayano angam narabhu janalanaya tatschapi satyam natavaiva maya. Narayano angam, Narayan, he says, is your anga, your part. Narayan is looking at Krishna. He says, Narayan, aren't you my Lord Narayan? Because I've come from Lord Narayan. He's come from Garbhadaksha Vishnu. And Narayan is your part. Brahma says this. So that's one wonderful sloka that Kaviraj Goswami uses, and Jiva Goswami has pointed this at this in a wonderful way. And then he gives so many other slokas. Devaki says that Mother Devaki says how he is the, everything is the part of the part of his part. And then Srila Jiva Goswami describes one story that I would like to read, because it is very sweet and we want to talk a little about Krishna avatar. And this comes from the 10th canto. And this shows that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because in the 10th canto, right at the end, there is a description of how Bhrigu Muni and the sages want to find out who is the Supreme. Between whom? Who? Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and Lord Vishnu. So Bhrigu Muni is elected in the assembly to test. And what's the conclusion? That Vishnu is the Supreme. So is Vishnu the Supreme, or is Krishna the Supreme? So in the same chapter, to show that it is Krishna that is actually the Supreme, he tells another wonderful pastime of Krishna. Although this pastime actually happened before the battle of Kurukshetra, it's described here right at the end to explain how Krishna is even the source of Mahavishnu, of all the Vishnus, because Krishna's do Bhagavan Swayam. Sukadev Goswami said, once in Dwarka, a Brahmana's wife gave birth to a son, but the newborn infant died as soon as he touched the ground. Now, we'll hear some of the very wonderful commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti also, Thakur. The Brahmana took the corpse and placed it at the door of King Ugrasena's court. Then, agitated and lamenting miserably, he spoke the following. The Brahmin said, this duplicitous, greedy enemy of the Brahmanas, this unqualified ruler addicted to sense pleasure, has caused my son's death by some discrepancy in the execution of his duties. Citizens serving such a wicked king, who take pleasure in violence and cannot control his senses, are doomed to suffer poverty and constant misery. The wise Brahmana suffered the same tragedy with his second and third child, each time he left the body of his dead son at the king's door and sang the same song of lamentation. When the ninth child died, Arjuna, who was near Lord Keshava, happened to overhear the Brahmana's lamentation. Thus Arjuna addressed the Brahmana, "What is the matter, my dear Brahmana? Isn't there some lowly member of the royal order here who can at least stand before your house with a bow in his hand?
These Kshatriyas are behaving as if they were Brahmanas, idly engaging in fire sacrifices. The rulers of a kingdom in which Brahmanas lament over lost wives, wealth, and children are merely impostors playing the role of kings just to earn their livelihood. So Arjuna's Kshatriya spirit was up. My lord, I will protect the progeny of you and your wife, who are in such distress. And if I fail to keep this promise, I will enter fire to atone for my sin. The Brahmanas said, neither Shankarshan, this is the Brahmanas' reply, neither Shankarshan, Vasudev, Prajumna, who is the best of bowmen, nor the unequaled warrior Aniruddha could save my sons. Then why do you naively attempt a feat that the almighty lords of the universe cannot perform? We cannot take you seriously. Now that's all you have to tell a Kshatriya. We cannot take you seriously. Arjuna said, I am neither Lord Shankarshan, O Brahmana, nor Lord Krishna, nor even Krishna's son. Rather, I am Arjuna, the wielder of the Gandiva bow. Do not minimize my ability, which was good enough to satisfy Lord Shiva, O Brahmana. I will bring back your sons, dear master, even if I have to defeat death himself in battle. Thus convinced by Arjuna, O tormentor of enemies, the Brahmana went home, satisfied by having heard Arjuna's declaration of his prowess. When the wife of the elevated Brahmana was again about to give birth, he went to Arjuna in great anxiety and begged him, please, please protect my child from death. After touching pure water, offering obeisances to Lord Maheshwara, and recollecting the mantras for his celestial weapons, Arjuna strung his Gandiva bow. Arjuna fenced in the house where the birth was taking place by shooting arrows attached to various missiles. Thus, the son of Prita constructed a protective cage of arrows covering the house upwards, downwards, and sideways. The Brahmana's wife then gave birth, but after the newborn infant had been crying for a short period, he suddenly vanished into the sky in his self-same body. The Brahmana then derided Arjuna in front of Lord Krishna. Just see how foolish I was to put my faith in the bragging of a eunuch. When neither Pradyumna, Aniruddha, Rama, or Keshava can save a person, who else can possibly protect him? To hell with that liar Arjuna! To hell with that braggart's bow! He is so foolish that he has deluded himself into thinking he can bring back a person whose destiny is taken away. While the wise Brahmana continued to heap insults upon Arjuna, Arjuna employed a mystic incarnation to at once go to Samyamani, the city of heaven where Lord Yamaraj resides. Not seeing the Brahmana's child there, Arjuna went to the cities of Agni, Nriti, Soma, Vayu, and Varuna. With weapons ready, he searched through all the domains of the universe, from the bottom of the subterranean region to the roof of heaven. Finally, not having found the Brahmana's son anywhere, Arjuna decided to enter fire, having failed to keep his promise. But just as he was about to do so, Lord Krishna stopped him and spoke the following words. I will show you, Krishna said, the Brahmana's sons. So please don't despise yourself like this. These same men who now criticize us will soon establish our spotless fame. Having thus advised Arjuna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, had Arjuna join him on his divine chariot, and together they set off for the west. The Lord's chariot passed over the seven islands of the middle universe, each with its oceans and its seven principal mountains, then across the Loka-Loka boundary, and it entered the vast region of total darkness. In that darkness, the chariot's horses, Saibya, Sugriva, Megapushpa, and Balahaka, lost their way. Seeing them in this condition, O best of the Bharatas, Lord Krishna, the supreme master of all masters of yoga, sent his Sudarsan disc before the chariot, That disc shone like thousands of suns. The Lord Sudarshan Chakra penetrated the darkness with its blazing effulgence. Racing forward with the speed of the mind, it cut through the fearsome, dense oblivion, expanded from primeval matter, as an arrow shot from Lord Rama's bow cuts through the enemy's army. Following the Sudarshan disc, the chariot went beyond the darkness and reached the endless spiritual light of the all-pervading Brahma Jyoti. As Arjuna beheld this glaring effulgence, his eyes hurt, so he shut them. From that region they entered a body of water resplendent with huge waves being churned by a mighty wind. Within that ocean, Arjuna saw an amazing palace more radiant than anything he had ever seen before. Its beauty was enhanced by thousands of ornamental pillars bedecked with brilliant gems. In that palace was the huge, awe-inspiring serpent, Anantashesha. He shone brilliantly with the radiance emanating from the gems. From gems on his thousands hoods and reflecting from twice as many fearsome eyes, he resembled white Mount Kailash, and his necks and tongues were dark blue. Arjuna then saw the omnipresent and omnipotent Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu, sitting at ease on the serpent bed. His bluish complexion was the color of a dense rain cloud. He wore a beautiful yellow garment. His face looked charming. His broad eyes were most attractive, and he had 8 long, handsome arms. His profuse locks of hair were bathed on all sides in the brilliance reflecting from the clusters of precious jewels decorating his crown and earrings. He wore the Kastuba gem, the marks of Srivats, and a garland of forest flowers. Serving that topmost lord of all lords, his personal attendants, headed by Sunanda and Nanda, his chakra and other weapons in their personified forms, his consort potencies, Pushti, Sri, Kirti, and Aja, and all his various mystic potencies. Lord Krishna offered homage to himself in this boundless form, and Arjuna, astonished at the sight of Lord Mahavishnu, bowed down as well. Then, as the two of them stood before him with joined palms, because Krishna was in Naralila, human Lila, so he was offering respects to Mahavishnu. This is what Jiva Goswami describes. The almighty Mahavishnu, supreme master of all rulers of the universe, smiled and spoke to them in a voice full of solemn authority. Lord Mahavishnu said, "I brought the Brahmanas' sons here because I wanted to see the two of you. My expansions who have descended to the earth to save the principles of religion. As soon as you finish killing the demons who burden the earth, quickly come back here to me. Although all your desires are completely fulfilled, O best of exalted personalities, for the benefit of the people in general, you should continue to exemplify religious behavior as the sages Nara and Narayan." So he's giving instructions to Krishna and Arjuna. Thus instructed by the Supreme Lord of the topmost planet, Krishna and Arjuna assented by chanting Om, and then they bowed down to Almighty Lord Mahavishnu. Taking the Brahmana's sons with them, they returned with great delight to Dwarka by the same path by which they had come. There they presented the Brahmana with his sons, who were in the same infant bodies in which they had been lost. Having seen the domain of Lord Vishnu, Arjuna was totally amazed. He concluded that whatever extraordinary power a person exhibits can only be a manifestation of Sri Krishna's mercy. Now here is the purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti describes Arjuna's amazement. Arjuna thought, "Just see, even though I am a mere mortal, by Krishna's mercy I have seen the Supreme Godhead, the root cause of everything." So who is the Supreme, according to Arjuna right here? Mahavishnu. Then after a moment, Arjuna thought again, "But why did Lord Vishnu say that he took away the Brahmin's children out of a desire to see Krishna? Why would the Supreme Personality of Godhead hanker to see his own expansion? This might be the effect of some peculiar temporary circumstance. But since he said the drikshuna instead of the drikshata, where the specific suffix suna carries the sense of a permanent characteristic, not a temporary one, it has to be concluded that he has always been wanting to see Krishna and myself. Even granted that this is so, why couldn't he simply see Krishna Dwarka? After all, Lord Mahavishnu is the all-pervading creator of the universe, which he holds like an amalaka fruit in his hand. Is it that he could not see Krishna in Dwarka because Krishna does not allow anyone to see him without his special sanction? And why also would Lord Mahavishnu, the compassionate master of all brahmanas, have repeatedly tormented an elevated brahmana year after year? He must have acted in this unusual way only because he could not give up his extreme eagerness to see Krishna. All right, he may have acted improperly for that reason, but why couldn't he have sent a servant to kidnap the Brahmin's sons? Why did he himself have to come to Dwarka? Was stealing them out of Krishna's capital so difficult that no one but Vishnu himself could hope to accomplish it? I can understand that he intended to cause so much distress to a brahmana of Lord Krishna's city that Krishna would be unable to tolerate it, and that he would grant Lord Vishnu his audience. Lord Vishnu inspired the distressed brahmana to pour out his complaints to Lord Krishna in person. Thus it is clear that Sri Krishna's status of Godhead is superior to Lord Mahavishnu's. Having thought in this way, Arjuna was totally amazed. He asked Lord Krishna whether these were actually the facts of the matter. And the Lord replied, as stated in the Harivamsa, Madarshanartam te vala ritas tena mahatmana vipratam ishyate krishno matsamipam na chanyata. It was only to see me that he, the Supreme Soul, stole the children. He believed only on a brahmana's behalf would Krishna come and see me, not otherwise. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti states, Thakur states, that Lord Krishna further told Arjuna, I did not go there, however, for the brahmana's sake. I went there, my friend, just to save your life. If it had been for the brahmana's sake that I had traveled to Vaikuntha, I would have done so after his first child was abducted. Sri Krishna Bhagavan ki, Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna ki jai. Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur ki jai. Sri Arjuna ki jai. Sri Jiva Goswami ki jai. Sri Srila Swami ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Sri Sukadeva Goswami ki jai.